Welcome to 28 and Searching. I'm your host, Samantha, and today I have Brianna Grantham with me. Hi, Brianna. Thanks for coming on my show.
Hi, Samantha. Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. Like, how old are you? Where are you located? How long have you been in your industry? That sort of thing.
I'm 30, and I'm currently in the greater Seattle area by way of the Virgin Islands. And I've been here for about 3 years. I've been doing sales and marketing to some extent or another for the past 12 years. I've been marketing communications consultant for the last 8, although that's been to various degrees of full-timedness, as I like to say. But this is what I've been doing for the past 3 years, exclusively, is marketing communications consulting.
Okay. And so, is that your job title, and what does that mean? So what exactly do you do, and are you working for yourself, or are you working for a company? Where are you at?
So I own BJG Consulting. We incorporated in 2008. We operate both out of Florida and Washington. Mm-hmm. We are a small business, woman-owned business, so kind of one of our distinguishers. So I do work exclusively for myself, by way of clients, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
And actually what I do is often just teach a lot about what marketing means and what marketing communications mean. As a marketing communication consultant, it's kind of an umbrella term. I both do marketing strategy and planning as well as communication strategy, but also some of the services underneath that. So sometimes that's actually developing marketing campaigns or copywriting or ghostwriting. And I do a couple of things that are a little bit a step to the left of marketing, that are a little bit more on the sales and communication side, like proposal writing, RFP responses. Kind of depends on the client and what their needs are. And usually what I'm doing is helping them to develop a plan and a strategy that will then allow them to grow business-wise enough that they can actually hire someone on full-time to do their marketing.
Okay, so you're more working with small businesses that are looking for the resources where they may not have the full-blown company funds to be able to have somebody on staff.
Typically, although I do have my longest running client actually since 2008, Ideal Protein of America. I've been working for their corporate office, like I said, for the last almost 10 years now. And they do have a full-blown marketing department. And sometimes, you know, bigger companies, some of the Fortune 500 companies will actually bring someone like me in because they need either a stopgap. Sometimes it's as simple as someone was out on maternity leave and they need another seat in the marketing department.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's that they just need an outside set of eyes to actually see where the gaps are
In
their marketing program.
Okay. And so when we're talking about marketing, because that's a pretty broad term, what are your focuses? Are you only focusing on like social media? Are you doing like paper? Are you doing events? Are you doing all of them? Are you kind of a la carte type service?
That's actually part of what I do, is I literally go into the business and say, here's what you should be doing for the most effective marketing.
Okay.
So while I do occasionally help with developing a full-blown social media strategy or plan, typically what I will say is, let's identify your most useful social media platforms, and then I will introduce them to somebody who actually specializes in social media management, because that is an entire animal all into itself.
Okay, so you're a big picture person. So you're going to be at the top of the chain. You're going to be saying, you're going to be delegating.
Yes.
So you work with a lot of other people. So you're basically, you're spotting the error in people's ways.
Yes, and I do a lot of project management, for lack of a better term.
Okay.
You know, if it's, I guess the easiest example would be if an entrepreneur comes to me and says, I have a new business idea. I don't know where to begin.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can go through their business plan and their actual marketing plan, but then I can also connect them with the people that they need to, you know, kind of fill out their team, so to speak. So website designer, graphic designer, you know, and basically what I do is keep a roster of vetted professionals throughout the U.S., frankly, some local, but some everywhere. That hit different price points, different aesthetics, different working styles, and that's kind of the way that I differentiate myself from marketing agencies, is if a client comes to me and does need the full-scale website, graphic design, branding, everything, mm-hmm. social media, then I'm going to pair them with other specialists that do that, and they have the confidence of knowing they have direct access to them. They're not working with the same team that 10 other clients are working with.
Okay. So if we're comparing you to maybe a more well-known position or another position, just something different, you would be like the general contractor building a house. You'd be the person that's hiring all of the carpenters and the roofers and the laborers to be able to build that house, and you're at the top of that
project. Sometimes I'm the architect.
Okay. So you do a little bit of both.
A little bit of both.
Okay. So how did you get here? So how did you get to this position? What was the driving force?
So I started out in sales, in college, so to speak. And I've done everything from retail to direct in-home sales. A lot of people are familiar with Cutco, Vector marketing. That was kind of how I cut my teeth on direct sales and truly understanding what it means to, you know, sell something, a product to somebody.
Sure.
Based on value points. So that was how I kind of cut my teeth. And then from there, I just sort of incorporated it into everything else I did. I do have my bachelor's in communication, communication studies, I guess is the technical degree. But my master's is actually, it's a liberal arts degree from St. John's College. So it's mostly philosophy and great books, which doesn't seem like a direct correlation to marketing. However, what the program teaches you is big picture. And knitting together seemingly unrelated concepts and creating kind of a well-knit tapestry out of them. So between my education and my professional experience over the years, those have grown so that now I have a pretty good grasp on why people buy what they do, why they don't buy, which is at the crux of marketing, is you're selling something. You're always selling an idea. You're narrating a story. Sure. I have my PhD in creative writing. So, you know, the storytelling, right. The storytelling is part of what I do. And, you know, there are some specifics behind it too. I was an English professor for 5 years, which my takeaway from that usually in application to marketing is I'm really good at educating people, but I'm also very good at listening. And that's predominantly what I do is I sit down, I listen to clients, I listen to what their difficulties are, their challenges, and then I kind of help them fill the gaps in because it's always most difficult to see your own gaps.
Yeah, where you're lacking.
Yes.
Okay. And so do you think, I mean, your degree's obviously been beneficial. You're connecting those pieces. They're coming together. Even though it's perhaps untraditional. When you're talking about marketers, I mean, communications is absolutely a degree that would fit into that. But when you talk about philosophy and you go into creative writing, those are not typically ones that you mesh together. So would you say that a degree is necessary if they're wanting to do this, if they're wanting to go into marketing communications, or if they're wanting to do their own business this way? Do you think it's necessary?
I think it is. There's a trade-off.
Okay.
I think you either need to have the solid academic background, so a degree in communications or marketing, or an MBA, you know, if you've gone to the master's level, those are definitely one way of getting there. The other way of getting there is just sheer experience. You know, not so many years ago, people didn't go to school for this. You just were, you know, a salesperson, for example, and then you became a sales executive. You know, you were in the, you know, sales and marketing department, and then you became a marketing expert, so to speak, and you moved up the chain. So we have only in the last few decades really made this an industry, and marketing is an industry. So there are multiple paths there, but I think at the end of the day, what is absolutely necessary is the credibility and some sort of credentials, either from experience or from academics. You know, and academics only get you so far, right? You still need to cut your teeth on real world stuff because what they teach you
can only go so far.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And depending on where you go and who you have is how much you're actually going to take away from it.
Right.
I mean, like you said, you went to a non-traditional route in your higher learning, so outside of your bachelor, and other people may have not ever made those connections. They may not ever thought that it benefited them at all. I mean, I know many people that get degrees in things like history or philosophy and end up not making it to any sort of position and working $15 an hour. So you also kind of have to have the mind to put it together. And in your experience, how detrimental has education, has not having education been? Does does the education really help you? Does people say that and say, wow, that this is her because she has this?
For the most part, people see PhD tagged on the end of your name and they they kind of go, ooh, what's that in? But other than that, you know, most people ask me actually exactly what you do. How did you get here? What's your background? And I always tell them, you know, like, my background is just a bunch of different kind of happy accidents and good choices that I've laid out on the table and said, what can I do with all of this? And what I can do with all of this is be a really effective marketer. So I think that it's worked out for me. Okay. I do know people who have MBAs who don't use them. And I also know people who have history degrees who are, like, phenomenal entrepreneurs in wildly different industries. So
yeah.
I think it just kind of
depends.
Yeah. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head too with, you have to identify how to use it.
Okay.
Just because your degree is in anthropology or history or whatever doesn't mean that that is the tiny little box that you have to fit in.
Sure.
Because there is no money in history or anthropology.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, unless you're going
to be in the basic jobs. Yeah. When you talk high level and you go into it, I mean, that's what we're trying to delve into here, is where you can use those types of degrees.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's great that you actually have degrees in things that are not necessarily traditionally your job, because that helps to show people that they can apply seemingly unrelated education or courses or jobs to something they actually want to do.
Yes.
So, in all honesty, what I kind of hear is that it really just depends on how you approach your client. It doesn't really matter your background, because you can sell yourself. So, sales is really the trait that you need more than the degree, right? Because it's, I mean, you knowledge is good. But.
Absolutely. I mean, the ability to do the analysis, and then actually, I mean, you do need to have the hard industry knowledge as well, and which you could pick up not through a degree necessarily, but
you still need something.
Right.
You
if
can't
we're
just
talking
go out
about
of
your
high
most
school.
Your most effective marketing strategy is going to come out of a lot of my research time and knowledge, not just somebody walking in off the street with a degree.
Sure.
Or not having a degree but having a sales background.
So you have to have working industry knowledge. It'll be it from whatever type of training you receive it in to be able to be successful at all. You can't, this isn't something you can pick up, be smooth, and just walk into. So I'm assuming that there's a lot of details, of, you know, where you can't just BS it.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think it's probably true in most industries, right? You know,
sure.
you it's always about constantly learning and new technologies and new best practices and doing a lot of industry reading. And that does consume a lot of my time when I'm not working with clients, is, you know, that constant search for what is the next best thing, what is the next big industry trend,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then breaking it down from there. Okay, well, this is the next big marketing industry trend. Well, what's the next big trend in tech marketing, and then in product marketing, and
sure.
then in, you know, ad infinitum to personal services or whatever it is.
So what would you say, if you're looking at this, where do you think somebody needs to start? What's a good entry-level position, or maybe a program or degree that somebody should go into if they're interested in marketing and communications?
I mean, if you're going to do marketing and communications, the obvious degrees are obviously a BA or BS in marketing or communication studies. There's a couple different, you know, breakdowns of what you can specialize in, but those are kind of the obvious pathways in.
Sure.
For the most part, unless you have a bachelor's degree, then you are going to need to go kind of the hard knock route of lots of experience. I
and
don't recommend an AA.
Okay.
I will say that. I do not recommend
bachelor
going
or none.
Yeah. There's no reason to put 2 years into it. You don't get the knowledge that you need.
Okay.
And most companies aren't going to look at that and say, oh, yes, this is an experience. Like, this person has the knowledge that we need. We're going to pay them the, you know, Markham
sure.
starting salary or
sure.
whatever. I think that anyone that goes into marketing should have some background in sales.
Okay.
You know, whether that is at a retail shop, you know, folding shirts at Old Navy.
Okay.
Or if it's something a little bit more intense, like doing direct sales or phone sales. Phone sales are great for learning about people in marketing. And marketing is a lot about people, right? Because it's about how you respond
yeah.
to whatever information is in front of you.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely a big part of it. Having people skills and actually understanding people is a really big part of it. I have actually seen people with backgrounds in psychology, anthropology, sociology do phenomenally well in marketing because that's, at the end of the day, what they
people,
know. They
yeah.
know people.
Sure. So when you're talking about good people skills, and what other types of personality traits? I mean, you're obviously going to have to be outgoing, right? Because you're working with people. You're going to have to know people. So you want to be outgoing. What other personality traits have you seen or you know personally work best in this environment?
You have to be like a rubber band.
Bounce back.
Yes, you have okay. to be very elastic, fairly durable. You do need thick skin. Conversations get heated, especially in small businesses where you've got all the people that are actually involved in it. But the truth is, it could be a, you know, an Amazon level business, and people are still going to be really invested in their piece of the marketing pie.
Mm-hmm.
But having thick skin is definitely really important. And knowing how to modify your communication style to your audience. Every client is not the same.
Okay.
I have clients who, you know, are based out of Quebec. So not only is there, you know, English is their second language, but also there's just a cultural difference between French Canadians and Quebecois and, well, the rest of Canada, but also the U.S.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and then there's, you know, I have clients who are significantly older than I am, and I have to approach that
differently.
Kind of
oh, yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know, and you learn very quickly, if you're effective, you learn very quickly how to tell somebody that their idea is horribly, horribly wrong without telling them that their idea is horribly wrong.
So you have to have almost a persuasive nature. So it's really a leadership quality because you want to be able to lead people who hire you to the correct path.
Right. And it does come back to listening to them and hearing what they're saying. You know, and you hear their pain points that way. So you hear what they need, but then you also hear how they've approached it in the past, which tells you something about them, which then gives you a better way of responding to them and saying, okay, well, I understand how you've been doing it. Have you ever considered this? No. Okay, well, maybe we can take what you've been doing and twist it so maybe it's going to be a little bit more effective. Because if it had been effective, I, your marketing consultant, wouldn't be here.
Sure. So that's a really good point to bring up about being a good listener, because oftentimes, in my personal experience, I get a salesperson and their goal is to sell. So if you're a salesperson that's super competitive where you're only thinking about the end goal, this is probably not for you.
Go into ad sales. Okay. Great money.
Okay.
Yeah. But yes, go into, and I will have meetings with potential clients where we'll go through, you know, I always do like a 20 or 30 minute, you know, sit down to kind of gauge where they are, what they mm-hmm. need and that type of thing. Sometimes it goes even longer than that. And at the end of it, I say, listen, I'm not what you need.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to, it does nobody any good for me to take their money, right, and not actually be effective for them.
And have an angry client.
Have an angry client, lowers my credibility. And then also maybe what they need is a social media manager. Maybe that's literally all that they need. Or something else entirely.
Yeah. Because, I mean, that's an important distinction. Because when we talk about first jobs and things that people should do, they think, oh, I'm great at sales, so maybe, you know, I heard once on this podcast I'm going to be great at marketing. But that's not true, because you do need to be good at sales, but you also need to be not necessarily non-competitive, but almost non-competitive. You need to be a good listener. You need to not just look at the end goal. So those are also personality traits that mm-hmm. you would say are definitely beneficial for what you're doing.
Yeah.
And especially when you own your own business, because I'm hearing, you know, when you talk about angering clients, you just got to sometimes let them go. You got to tell mm-hmm. people the truth. So you got to be honest.
Yes.
It's not just about your product.
Absolutely.
Okay. So what are some of the personality traits that could flounder? We talked about being competitive. What are some other personality traits that you don't think in your personal experience would work in your industry?
Stubbornness. Okay. If people are really stubborn, they tend to struggle in marketing. Now, they might be great at sales because that's a tenacity type of personality sure. trait, right? But they're not going to be as great in marketing because they're not going to be willing to listen to other ideas. They're not going to be willing to adjust course, to take other people's opinions into account. And I think that there are a lot of probably traits that circle around that. And I do think that people who have, or not I think, I know that anyone who has a need to always be right, marketing is just not your world.
Okay.
Because it doesn't matter how much data we have and how best our intentions are, you know, how well planned out everything is. Marketing can still go way left. Because it's reliant on so many different things. And so you have to be willing to say, you know what? I said that you absolutely need to go to this trade show. It was the best way for you to spend your money this year. I'd be wrong. Actually, here's what we learned. And you have to be willing to own that. So it comes back to honesty. And, you know, you do have to be humble.
Sure.
So if you're really prideful, I think that's kind of what it comes down to. If you are certain that you know the most, you probably shouldn't be in marketing. You'd be in sales.
So would another faction of being in marketing and communications be almost like mining other people's brains? Because if you're working for somebody else, you're really, because you can't always be right. So when they're talking, are you pulling out their ideas and just making them clear for them? Like, is that kind of how that works?
Sometimes it is just a matter of translation or interpretation. You take someone's ideas. I like to call it brain dump. Okay. And that's what I do when I sit down with clients. Sure. The very beginning is, okay, I just need all the key stakeholders to sit down and brain dump on me so that I can pull out all the information or what's currently going on. And that tends to happen more in smaller businesses that may not have organized processes and documentation of everything that's going on. But it's very much about listening to what they're saying, listening to what they're not saying. That's usually where the gaps are.
Okay.
Yeah. And sometimes it just means the follow-up question of, oh, I heard you say, you know, you have, you know, for example, a trade show program and that you're dumping a lot of money into your trade show stuff, but what are you doing in terms of, like, customer events? And then maybe it comes out that actually they did try that one time and they lost a lot of money and it was horribly unsuccessful, but that doesn't mean that it wasn't a valuable concept. It's just that they feel burned by it because they've tried it in the past. Without listening to them, you know, and then asking about it, I would never have known that.
Yeah. Okay. So what parts of your personality have struggled in this career? What's something that you had to overcome in your own personality where either you had to mold or shape what you're doing to fit it, or you had to change to be in it?
I'm a very independent person, and I like to spend time with other people who are independent and don't require a lot of hand-holding, which is the polar opposite typically of my clients. And it's definitely a constant shift on my part. You know, I do have some clients that are perfectly independent and, you know, they use me for exactly what I'm there for, and they have other clients that need a lot more hand holding. At the end of the day, I just kind of remind myself that, you know, I am their subject matter expert, I am their marketing expert, and that's why they're coming to me for the hand holding. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, that's what I'm there
for.
That's your
job title for them.
Yes. And anytime I start getting frustrated because a client feels like they need too much babysitting, you know, I try to take a step back and say, okay, why do they need so much babysitting? Is it because I haven't communicated something clearly enough? And if that's the case, I can work on that because that's my end. You know, if it's something on their end, then maybe we need to sit down and reevaluate. It's possible they may just not be a good fit for me.
Sure.
And that happens every now and again where it part ways with a client because it's just not a good relationship. Yeah.
And so we're gonna switch gears just a little bit because you have the marketing communications component, but you also have the owning your own business component.
Mm-hmm.
And although a lot of people, you know, it all depends on individual businesses and they all run differently, but a lot of them have similar attributes. So if we're talking about you owning your own business in marketing and communications and you're having to let go of a client, how do you figure that out? How do you have that kind of awareness that that's going to need to happen? If somebody walked into the situation, how do you know it's not right and it's just not you?
Sometimes it's just a basic gut check, you know, and there's no scientific way of saying it is just that. It's an instinct, it's a gut feeling, it's your intuition, and sometimes I can look back from the very first meeting and realize that I just ignored that little niggling feeling or the little voice. You know, and I think I get, the longer I do this, the better I get at catching that early on rather than too late.
Sure.
And I call it, I typically call it breaking up with clients.
Makes sense.
Because it does become sort of an intimate relationship. I know a lot about my clients' businesses because I have to ask uncomfortable questions like, well, how much money did you make last year? How much money are you dedicating to your marketing? What are you spending it on? Tell me all, you know, open the pantry of your
everything
you know,
they don't
messy
want to
financials.
Talk about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I need to know all of this. And there's definitely a learning curve for that. When you first go into any business, I think your inclination is to take any and all business, anything that might have a dollar sign attached to it. And that's a great way to burn out. It's a great way to fail as well, because the more smaller projects, you know, if you're in a service-based industry like I am, the more smaller projects you pick up, the more likely you are to drop one of them or mess up, as opposed to, you know, having like three or four
larger,
consistent clients. Right. And that's obviously not an option for a lot of different industries.
Yeah.
Because for some of them, that's what you do, is you have those small clients.
And go, yeah.
Right. But I think it's really important to, you know, we call it self-care, right? That's such a, like, hot, we love
say, that's
to
a
use
term.
This term, right?
Yes.
Self-care. But as ridiculous as it's kind of become, you do as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, and if you're a business owner of a, you know, million-dollar company, it doesn't change. You still have to remember to shut the phone off at a certain point, to take those times. You know, you see articles written like, take your hard, you know, 48 hours, 2 days a week, doesn't matter which day, take your 2 days. That's probably not necessarily true for everyone, and is definitely not an option when you're in, like, the first couple of years of business owning.
Yeah.
But I think it's really important to set boundaries. And when you set those boundaries, that's when you know it's time to let a client go. That's when you know that it's not a good business decision for you and your business. And from the marketing end of it, and when I do work with startups and entrepreneurs, one of the very first things we go through is the creation process for a mission and a vision statement. Because if you have those set in place in the very beginning, you can always come back to them and almost like measure an opportunity or a decision against the mission and vision statement and say, well, does it fit? Because if it doesn't, and I say yes, then I knew in advance it wasn't the right fit, but I did it anyway. And if it doesn't fit and I say no, then at least I have the peace of, you know,
confidence that...
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thing that you bring up there, because would you say that's almost a tool? Like, let's say you're not a business owner yet. Let's say you're meddling or doing, or maybe you're looking for a career. I would almost say that that's an important piece to do anyway. Mission and vision, I mean... that those would be good for finding a career, right?
Oh, yeah.
Then you know if it fits, because things like, you know, different personality traits that just don't fit, or maybe you ignore your gut instinct most of the time. Maybe you power through. That's who you are.
Right.
Well, maybe this isn't for you, because you could ruin your reputation before you even really have one doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that that's a very good point for anyone in general to do. Great advice. So at this point, I know you own your own business, and so this is kind of a moot point, but because you have experience in marketing communications and you know people, I'm sure, in your industry, is there a ladder or a lateral move you can make from here? So if somebody gets to this point where they're either doing it on their own or they're in a company and they're thinking, man, I really want to make more money, or I really want to do more, can you do more with this?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. If you're on what we call the agency side, so someone like me, who's either a consultant or they actually work for a marketing or creative services agency, ad agency, those kind of lumping them all together, they all serve distinct purposes but often cross over. Then there's certainly opportunity to, you know, actually become like an account manager, and then you go and work on the agency side to do that. That would sort of be a lateral move.
Okay.
If I, for example, were to go work in an agency, that's probably where I would fit. It might be a step backward. Now, if I were going to go back into the corporate world, I would be looking at like marketing director, VP, CMO, chief marketing officer. And there's an interesting set of language that gets used for marketing positions to make them sound like they're more important than they are. So if you are new to marketing or just out of school, please be aware that if you see specialist or coordinator behind anything, it's a very low salary and it's almost definitely entry level.
So go for it.
Yeah.
Apply for it all.
Marketing specialist, marketing generalist, mm-hmm. marketing coordinator, event coordinator, specialist. Like those are all titles for like entry level, not making a ton of money, but that is a great way to learn a lot.
Good place to start.
Yeah, it's a good place to start. And if a company has a good marketing department, you can slide into one of those positions, you will learn a lot because in a good marketing department, there's a lot of collaboration and communication. So you constantly pick up on other things. I learned event marketing from all of the people that I've done event marketing with, even though I've never sat in the, you know, event specialist or, you know, coordinator seat.
So would you say that that's almost a drawback when you're looking at doing it on your own versus working in an actual corporate environment? Because you don't have those minds to collaborate with? I mean, it almost sounds to me like it might be better when you're getting out of school or, you know, if you're going straight into it. You should go into those types of jobs before you even decide to do it yourself because then you have the mind.
Yeah, don't try to come out of school and become a marketing consultant.
Okay.
There's a lot of reasons for that, but the biggest is just that you don't have any credentials. You have nothing to trade on at that point. You haven't built up any references, no professional experience, which means that anyone who would potentially be hiring you is taking a really big gamble. Plus, if they take a look at, you know, if you're just out of school with your BA in marketing, your entry-level salary is generously going to be like $45,000.
Sure.
So that breaks down to a fairly low hourly rate.
Yeah, and when we're talking about that, we're talking about, I mean, that's going to vary with location, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're in one of the most populous
expensive places
in the world, basically. Yeah. So, I mean, just want to make sure my listeners know that's a difference. But, so it breaks down. So it's low wage, but you can generally move up to make pretty decent. But you can make a career, like, you can make a livable wage. Wherever you're at,
absolutely.
You can live off of being in marketing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or I mean, communication. Because those are two separate things now, aren't we?
Yes, they are. And that's actually a really good point. When we say communications, typically the reason we separate it out from marketing is communications can be internal, so like HR stuff. It can be company culture, quote-unquote development. It can be even just the way that emails come down in an organization, ghostwriting CEO's emails,
yeah.
for example.
Mm-hmm.
External communications is typically the PR.
Your Facebook posts.
Yeah. And so sometimes that falls like firmly under marketing. Sometimes it falls under the HR and like PR communications because it depends on the company and it depends on how they utilize their social media, for example. But a lot of it can in brand reputation and brand management falls under the PR communications side of things. So, you know, that's if there's some sort of scandal or if something happens or if there's good news, right? There's a merger, they've acquired something, they're making a big announcement. That all falls under that. The strategy side of it is actually laying out what do we say, how do we say it, who says it.
Okay.
Internally and externally. And it gets a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah.
But that's like the general gist of, yeah.
We're gisting it out. Okay. So then when... But what you fall under is mostly marketing with communication. So you're not doing you do ghostwriting, but it's I'm assuming it's not your bread and butter. That's not where you're at. That's just something you do because you can.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to focus on that then, because that's more where you're at. I don't, you know, I do want people to know that that is something if you want to look into, because I'm assuming communication when you talk about ghostwriting is going to be a more introverted type situation. It's going to be way less outgoing and personal as marketing is. And so when you're talking about ghostwriting, so that is something that people can look into, and perhaps we can do another podcast about that portion of you. Yeah.
And it's worth noting that, I mean, you could absolutely make a career out of ghostwriting, copywriting. You know, marketing copywriting can be incredibly lucrative. It can be difficult to break into and put the groundwork in. that is theoretically something you can actually do straight out of school or without a degree if you are actually a good writer and you're savvy to what makes good marketing content.
Yeah.
Then there's absolutely ways that you can go into that. But like you said,
that's gonna be a whole different thing. So just so everybody knows, we're focusing mostly on marketing and communications and communications as a marketing aspect, not in the other divisions that you just talked about, because that's great to know, because I did not know that there were so many, you know, you kind of think that there are, and words get used a lot for very broad terminology, but I just want to make sure people understand that. We'll go through and talk about communications a different time. So, I mean, what are some of the drawbacks? So when we're looking at what you're doing, is it time demanding? Is it, you know, is it physically demanding? Are you, you know, are there long hours? I mean, low pay? Like, what are we looking at for drawbacks of the career?
It can be a little feast or famine. Anytime you work for yourself, that's basically the gamble that you're making. Mm-hmm. That's much more comfortable having someone else cut your paycheck. That's just a fact.
Yep.
So that's definitely an emotionally draining side of it, is that potential for, you know, periods where you just don't have money coming in or you don't have new revenue coming in. Another drawback is that, you know, you do need to be fairly constantly available. Most of my clients are spread out. They're not all located, you know, within driving distance of me. Which means that I've set myself up to have a little bit more freedom to do things like travel. I rarely take a vacation where I'm not working.
Okay.
And, you know, my clients pretty much have access to me all of the time. Now, I determine whether or not I'm going to respond to them. You know, if someone sends me a text at 8 p.m.,
yeah,
I'm going to look at the text and then decide if it warrants a response. You know, same with emails. I'm constantly watching it.
But it's something that you do have to constantly watch, because there are those instances where you do need to respond.
Absolutely. And that is one of the drawbacks, is that you do absolutely need to be on top of all of those clients. You know, I have a commitment to my clients that I respond to emails within a, you know, a business day. And usually that means over the weekend, I still respond within 24 hours, depending on what it is.
Sure.
And sometimes the response is just, this is not an emergency. I know you think it is, but it's not. here's why it's going to be okay. But even just knowing how to respond to that, sometimes that takes as much sort of like emotional investment as time, because you're determining, you know, how to respond to them so that they do understand it's actually not an emergency. It's okay. Go about your weekend.
Well, and even just responding to them so that they know you're there. Like, you don't even have to say anything substantial. But I would assume, because I know from my personal experience, when, you know, somebody emails or texts me, I may not have time to deal with it, but I need to let them know, because I'm trying to be personable, and they're doing me a favor. You know, they're doing something for me, or maybe they're, you know, they're going to be an interviewee, or they're going to, you know, help me out. I need to make sure that I'm committing to them as much as they're committing to me, even if I can't give the full response. So I'm assuming it's very similar.
Absolutely. I send a lot of, I can't deal with that right now. Let's follow up with this, you know, and then set a time, or let's set a call, or whatever it is. And part of, I guess, one of the drawbacks of what I do, and this is probably true for a lot of industries, is, you know, if I'm sitting down working on a client's anything. So whether that is, you know, drafting a press release, or it's more big idea, creating a strategy, looking at, you know, marketing ROI and market research, I need to be focused on that. So I can't take a phone call if it comes in the middle of me doing that, because it's going to pull me out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that then I do have to come back to that person who called me and respond to them. And the same goes with the email that comes during that, you know, blocked out 2 hours or whatever, that I do eventually have to come back to it. But I try to also be very upfront with my clients that, like, you know, I'm probably not going to take your phone call if we haven't scheduled it, because I'm working on something.
Yeah.
I may answer your text message, because that's much less time consuming and invasive.
Yeah.
Right. And the same with an email, you know, and so we sort of had those tiers of communication, right? Like, call is immediate, text messages, please pay attention to me.
Yeah.
And the email is like, okay, when you get to it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what would you say is been the worst day of your career so far?
The worst day of my career so far. That's an interesting question. I don't know if I've ever thought about that before.
And you can absolutely just give examples of how that worst day goes. You don't have to give specifics if you don't have them. Just kind of to give somebody... I kind of want to give the listeners a reality check of what can occur in this business.
So I think there's two things. I don't know if they like if they've ever coincided on the same day. But one is looking at your bank account. As a business owner, when you look at a bank account and you start doing the profit loss comparison and you realize that you're spending more than you're making, mm-hmm. even though you knew that like in the back of your head, sometimes there are just the days where that hits home a little bit harder, you know, than you normally let it.
Especially when you're starting out, I'm sure that's...
Yeah.
I mean, even when you're going full bore, I mean, at some point there's always going to be those days.
And it's when you have a big... Sometimes it's just because you had a big expenditure. You know, I did a complete new website last year. That was a big expenditure.
Yeah.
And so absolutely. I knew, even though I had planned for it, and I planned for taking that deficit for mm-hmm. however many months it still was scary looking at the pluses and minuses, you know, in my books. And I have that conversation whenever I'm working with new businesses or entrepreneurs is, you know, this is going to happen. Emotionally, you need to be prepared for the day when you break down because you realize that you have negative money.
Yeah.
And you need to keep spending money in order
to make more.
Make money. Which is unfortunately also the gist of marketing, that you need to spend money in order to make money.
Yeah.
And then the other side of it is anytime I feel like I've disappointed a client or let a client down, or the client hasn't seen the success that they thought that they would, whether that was actually because of me or what I did or not, you know, I get obviously very invested in my clients. Their success is my success. So if they aren't succeeding, you know, I have to take a step back and look at why, but I have to kind of get through that emotional fog first, because that is the first, like going back to the rubber band and having thick skin, that, you know, the first reaction is still always what could I have done differently or better? And sometimes there is something to be found there. And other times it's just, you know, once I, especially if it's like a marketing plan or a strategy, once I hand that off to the client, what they do with it is out of my hands. So if they don't execute on it, you know, I can look at whether or not I, you know, it's clear enough to them or they have a good enough grasp on it, or maybe it's just that, you know, they're not following through on it.
Yeah. Okay. So you really need reflection and perseverance when you're having those bad days in this industry because you don't have money. And then your client can fail. And those things can happen on the same day. Yes. I mean, they can be...
They sure can.
They can be the same instance. So you really have to believe in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And almost you have to have enough confidence in yourself to know that you're good enough at that point, I would assume.
You do. One of the things that I've learned, and this is not... This doesn't come from me. I've learned it from other people along the way. But it helps to keep track of wins. And to keep them accessible so that you can remind yourself, you know, and I think this is true of any small business owner or entrepreneur, but just to remind yourself of what you've accomplished. So even though that account balance may be crazy negative, maybe you just brought on a new client. Maybe that client's only going to make you $200, but hey, that's one more client that you have, you know, who believes that you are capable of doing what you are, you know, offering to them. And so sometimes it's just that little mindset check and seeing your wins, seeing the money that you have made, even if it doesn't feel like it's filling up the bucket.
Okay. What would be your best day?
Best day is when you have a client who just, like, wildly kills it and calls you and, like, wants you to be their maid of honor at their wedding because they love you so much. Like, that's what... like, and I have... one of those types of wins right now. I do a little bit of professional marketing for, or what do I call it? Professional branding. You know, for people who are looking for jobs or, you know, who are at a certain point in their career where they're getting ready to either move companies or move up. You know, I do a lot of the higher level executive, like resumes, cover writing, that type of thing. A little bit of coaching, although I say that real carefully.
Okay.
But I have a client who came to me and we were going to do her resume cover letter and her LinkedIn profile summary. Great. Super excited about it, right? Really like her. We clicked really well. You know, she was really excited about it. She's also working on timeline for when she's leaving her current company. And she sent me one job. So I always ask these types of clients to send me like 3 to 5 positions that you would like to apply for so I can get a sense of what the keywords are, what you actually do.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is also one of the ways that I keep abreast of industry standards and best practices. So I, you know, I use clients to also keep educating myself. So she sent me, you know, a couple of different job postings. And then she's the one that she sent me said, this is my dream job. I would kill for this job. It's my, you know, the company is one that I believe in. Their product and, you know, their whole industry that they're in is my personal passion. This is, you know this about me because of other things I've told you. I would just kill for this job. I'm like, okay, great. Well, let's tailor one of your cover letters exactly to that. Yeah. So we did. She sent it off. Couple weeks later, I hear back from her. Not only did she actually get a call to respond to that position, but she did a phone interview with them and then has 2 more this week.
Wow.
I was like dancing around. I was so excited with her.
Yeah.
That's happened because that was the goal, right? She can continue using her resume and cover letter for any other company. But if she gets that position, like even
that's
just
what
to
she
have
wants.
This
yeah.
far. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's like, it's a small win. Like this is one woman with, you know, one dream job, but still it's such a huge win.
Yeah, that's a great win. That's a big win. Okay. So going off the best day, what are the benefits of your career?
I do take vacation pretty much whenever I want.
Because you take work with you. So it's
right.
mobile.
It's mobile. It's definitely mobile. I get to choose my own clients, so that is the distinction between either working in a corporate company or working in an agency, is I absolutely get to choose who I work with.
Okay.
It also means that I set my own boundaries. I have a lot of gut checks when it comes to what type of companies I will and will not work with.
Sure.
So that helps. And I constantly get to learn from people. That's a kind of a common theme, I think, with me as a person, is just that I like learning. I got a PhD for no good reason.
Yeah.
Like I like learning. And because I am basically free to work with anyone in any industry, that means that I am always able to learn more about industries that I already know something about and to learn about new industries, which I find fascinating.
Sure.
So that's definitely a huge benefit to me. And I make a lot of, community connections as well. You know, going back to your question of, you know, if you're just starting out, is it better to go into a corporate position or to try to go out as a consultant on your own?
Mm-hmm.
No. Right.
Yeah.
But for me now, having come through that path of been in the corporate positions, one of the things that I do now is I surround myself with other people in my industry, you know, and we both collaborate on things and we share, you know, lessons and industry knowledge, but we also just, you know, like we form one another's kind of support teams as well. And that's definitely a benefit, is that I get to go
networking.
You know, yeah, I get to go networking. I get to talk to 4 different graphic designers who all have 4 wildly different styles and, you know, like approaches to what they do.
Sure.
And different people, different businesses.
Yeah. Okay. What do you love most about what you do?
I like the challenge. I love the problem solving.
Okay.
My first meeting with any client, at some point I will always say, I provide both the forest and the trees. and I see, you know, the dead spots in the forest, right? And then I help find what we can fill that in with, which is, I was an English professor. I like using fancy words,
yeah.
Metaphors, right?
But metaphors, yeah, absolutely.
But that's what I love. I love going into a business. Not that I love working with my little guys, my entrepreneurs, but my like all-time favorite thing is walking into a business who has a marketing budget, who's like, listen, it's not working. Why isn't it working? Can you help us fix it? What do we do? I love that. I love looking at all of your problems and then what is working and then finding where that balance is and then creating the solution to it. Because it's not a, you know, it's not a clear answer. You know, it's not like, it's not just sales where you have objections. Like when you learn how to sell, you learn how to answer customers' objections. You always want to get the customer to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Marketing's a little bit different. So maybe what you want is not for the customer to say yes. Maybe you want them to say something else entirely.
Yeah.
Sometimes you actually want the customer to say no. So it's not as like cut and dry as that. And it's pulling together all of the pieces, the industry knowledge, doing a little bit of research, which I like clients and projects that require me to learn something. I don't ever want to walk in the door of a client and know absolutely everything that I need to for them, because at that point it's boring.
Yeah.
And this keeps me entertained.
Yeah, absolutely. What would you say made you fall in love with your career? What made you say that this is what I want to do?
I think it was the marriage of kind of analysis and creativity that goes into effective marketing.
Okay.
I am both, you know, very analytical and very logical on the one side, and that's what allows me to see the forest.
Yeah, okay.
You know, but I'm very creative. You know, I am a writer, fiction and obviously business stuff as well, an academic, but this allows me to marry the two of them and create new and wonderful things every time I smoosh them together. And I think when I realized that that was how I could actually bring both sides of it together in a practical, packageable method.
Sure.
That was when I kind of was like, oh, this is what I want to do.
Okay, fair. Do you have currently any expansion plans for what you're doing?
I do.
Okay. You want to share?
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about it. Generally speaking, the way that I approach my business is 20/80. Which I'm sure you will hear multiple people talk about. And I know that you know the 20/80, right?
Every industry will say 20/80.
Right. So I have a 5-year kind of business plan, and the strategy is right now 80% of my business comes from bigger companies, 20% comes from smaller companies,
mm-hmm.
Which is obviously the opposite of how it's supposed to be. So the point is over the 5 years to flip that so that 20% of my revenue is coming from larger companies, and then the 80% is small businesses, startups, entrepreneurs, women-owned businesses, because that's truly my passion. But that supports, you know, lower rates and that type of
thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So over the course of the next 5 years, what I want to do is actually slowly start building out more of a consulting firm. So I do want to be able to bring on some copywriters and virtual assistants, potentially some graphic designers and web designers as well. Not to necessarily build out a full service marketing agency, but to build out all the tools so that those small businesses and entrepreneurs and startups can come to us. And we do have a full service package where we control all of the rates and all of the factors so that they can take it and run.
Okay.
And that may be, you know, starting out, that'll just be contractors and not necessarily employees, because...
Of course, yeah.
It's exponentially more expensive to have employees.
Absolutely.
But that's the idea long term. And then, you know, after those five, once I hit kind of that 5-year mark, so we're talking like 2023, which seems really far away.
Not at all. It goes so fast.
It really does. So once I get there... then the idea is to, start training someone to actually take over the day-to-day management and move a little bit more into just the subject matter expert role and do a little bit more speaking and consulting and less managing.
Everything.
Yes.
Well, that sounds awesome. That's well put together, again, with the plan. So, I mean, that's a big part.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely something that I think people, a lot of people need to think of in anything they're doing before they find a career.
Mm-hmm.
Planning is super important. So we've kind of gone over marketing and communication. We've delved into what it means and even being a business owner and kind of the differences that are going along with you. I just have a couple more questions.
Mm-hmm.
What did you want to be when you were a kid?
So when I was really little, two things. I always wanted to be a writer.
Of course.
And that's still True. You know, like, that's still absolutely still true.
Nobody ever stops wanting to be a writer. That never happens.
And I do still write, so I guess that has to be said. But I also really wanted to be an attorney. I was a very argumentative, stubborn little pain in the ass as a kid. I was way too smart for my own good, and I was really precocious, and I was obnoxious about it. But I loved to argue, and so people would always say, oh, you'd make a really good lawyer, and it kind of sunk in and grabbed hold. I kind of let go of that in undergrad a little bit and kind of was like, oh, I don't really know if I want to do this anymore. Full disclosure, I did actually take my LSAT and started applying to law schools before I realized that I had absolutely no desire to be an attorney anymore.
I think a lot of people do that. I took my LSATs thinking I wanted to be a lawyer, and
yeah, it's just not, no.
I don't think I do. I think it's kind of crazy because you're not the first creative person I've heard say that, because I also, and then I've met other people who are, you know, writers or people who are like the creative mm-hmm. aspect of things, and they've also wanted to be, it's a very weird, I'm going to have to get a lawyer on the show.
Yes.
Yes. Talk about
a couple
this.
Of different types of lawyers too, yes. Because that's the thing is,
I was so like, many.
Well, and I was all idealistic. I was like, I want to go into constitutional law. Well, that's not really like, real? You don't get to just like go in constitutional law. That's not really how it works. No. You also can't make money really once you get there. But the way that you make money is in like, you know, patent and contract mm-hmm. law and
divorce
law. Divorce, like, the really messy versions of law. That's how you make money.
The horrible that you're working so much. I'm going to have to get him on it because that's hilarious.
My favorite story about when I decided not to be an attorney, although to be fair, it was before I took the LSATs. I actually interned with a criminal defense attorney when I was in college.
Okay.
He was like, great guy, has been disbarred. Not so ethical. poor businessman running practice, but he was a criminal defense attorney, and there were at least two times where I went and picked up payments from clients where he straight up was like, don't touch the money. I was like, what do you mean? He was like, don't touch it. Wear gloves, take it in a bag, whatever you gotta do, but don't touch the money. I will take it home and put it in the washing machine. And I was like, that's not a real thing. That's legitimate. I was like, that's not a real thing. He was like, no, yes, it is a real thing. And I know you and I have talked about it because of your experience banking, in banking. Yeah. But then I interviewed a convicted killer in prison, like had to go meet her in prison. That was when I kind of was just like, you know.
Maybe not.
Definitely not. Criminal law, probably not law. This all seems...
It's good to know what you don't want to do.
A little dramatic.
Oh, that's amazing. What is the best piece of advice you've received about business? It doesn't have to be your business. It can just be business in general.
You have to love what you do. And you have to be willing... You have to love it enough that when you start hating it, you still want to do it.
I completely agree with you. 100% agree. Finally, what is the one piece of advice you would give to somebody wanting to start out in this career?
Find a company for your first... Actually, be picky about your first position that you take. Find a company that actually takes good care of its people, that fosters a good learning environment and mentorship, because this is an industry where you either get snowplowed or... You have somebody who, you know, or a team, really, is what you want, but that you're going to learn from and that are going to give you the skills, both soft and hard, to continue and to be successful. You know, and if you can find a way to tie it into a personal passion, that's always great. But sometimes it's just a matter of, you know, take a position that you're qualified for in a company that is reputable and that has a good internal organization for marketing, and then you can actually grow from there. And that's usually more valuable than taking a higher paying position at a company that has a really toxic marketing department, and they can get very toxic.
So vet them.
Yes. Look at, this is probably true for anybody anywhere, but you know, do your due diligence. Go and look at what people who have left the company, their reviews on Glassdoor and Indeed, and look at what they say about the company and actually pay attention to it. Reach out to people on LinkedIn either who are still in the organization or who have left, ask them why they've left, or ask them how they feel about the organization from the inside.
Sure.
Because it's, we have the access to people now. It's not some big secret where people work.
Yeah.
Right? This information is out there. Reach out to them. Use it and make good decisions. And that's definitely something I learned the hard way. You know, and I think most of it, anybody who's over the age of like 27 has probably done this at least once, where you've thought that you had this amazing job and this amazing company, and like less than 3 months later, you realize it was awful.
Yes. More times than I care to admit. That's great advice. That's very true. Well, it was great talking to you. I'm glad to hear about all this. Thank you for being on my show.
Thanks for having me on. This has been fun.
If you like this episode or you're looking to change your career, go to 28andsearching.com or become a patron to get exclusive content sent directly to you. See you next week.